crew won't remember this, but a couple of weeks ago we met and we saw, we were speaking about sports personalities.
Right.
And we were talking about how sport is very interesting and it becomes very mundane until, until you've got someone who has something else.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember we were talking about? I'm not wording it very well, but we spoke about this. We've got to do a podcast on this, you know.
It was the Drive to Survive stuff that the penny dropped for me on this one.
Yeah, yeah.
Where in Formula One, lots of my friends love Formula One. Lots of them don't love Formula One. They don't kind of get it. It's a bit boring. You know, it's watching cars whiz around a track.
Yeah.
And my friend Andy was telling me that his wife, hated Formula One, but she just thought it was boring.
Yeah, yeah.
And then one winter, they watched Drive to Survive together.
And that's a film on Netflix or a documentary?
Think of it as a documentary of the previous season.
Right.
So it's obviously there's lots of, I don't know, it's quite a secretive F1. So what they do is they have the cameras following people around the grid and in the paddock and stuff. And in the engineering teams, and they follow them at quite a detailed level, and they get like quite candid footage of them essentially, and really top secret stuff that happens from the teams. But then it doesn't air until the season's finished.
Right, right.
So then between the seasons, they kind of air the Drive to Survive from the previous season.
Oh,
so you start to kind of see those things, obviously, that you watched as a fan, you start to then see those stories, and it is the stories and the personalities and the characters.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating. But anyway, he said that he watched that with his wife and she just got it.
Yeah.
And he said then the next season started and said she was avid. She was just completely, and she knew everybody. You know, she was she would point, oh, that's Zach in the thing. And he's, you know, he's an American. He does this and blah, blah, blah. You know, and she really got into it.
Yeah.
But once she could attribute people.
Yes.
To the little whizzy racing cars.
Yeah.
All of a sudden it made total sense to her.
Yeah.
But everything before that was just, it's just an annoying noise. You know, I don't get it.
Yeah.
And I think that is true. It is, it's about people, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think life in general is about people. You know, when you, I was talking to some of the people in our team about applying for jobs.
Yeah.
And we were talking about, skills and things like that.
Yeah.
And I was trying to remind them that people deal with people.
Yeah.
How you appear and your personality and your character, that's probably got a lot more to do with your success in life than the core skills that you've got or the peak skills that you build.
Yes.
Right? And people, if people like you and you get on with people, they're much more likely to want to engage with you and do more stuff with you in the future.
That's very interesting. Yeah.
It's fascinating.
Yeah.
But I think sports the same. I think it's, you I don't know.
When you find someone to connect with, all of a sudden you fall in love with the sport because you fall in love with the people.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because that's what you care about. You're almost, I think, this is what I do anyway. I tend to almost visualize that.
Yeah.
That person. And that's, I've never really had an affliction for sport. I've never really loved sport. But there are a few sports that I have. And so Formula One was always, it was always the thing for me. I think growing up near Donington Park helped and seeing that. And my dad was a big motor racing fan. My next door neighbour was a big motor racing fan. So I got involved in that. But also the people that I saw, I kind of identified with.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? The engineers, they were a bit nerdy and there was a lot of thinking and physics and things like that in there. And I don't know, I kind of identified with them a little bit and thought, they're my people. These are my people.
Yeah.
And then I got to know them and that's how I got in touch with the sport. And similarly, tennis.
Tennis was something I
really liked. I always used to love watching tennis. Mm. But again, that was the people. It was about seeing and watching the tennis stars. And then thinking, do you know, they're my people. And you get to know the personalities and then the sport attaches you. So it's not the sport itself for me. It is about the people.
The people involved in it. Yeah. Because I've never really been I've never really found any sport. I kind of was interested in things that my friends were interested in. But that's because my friends were interested in them. And I remember watching one of the football big games. I can't remember if it was Euros, the World Cup or something. But everyone went to the pub and watched it together.
Yeah.
I can't remember. I don't remember anything about the game.
The community.
But I loved that everyone was having a pint and cheering and that was nice. So for me, it was about people connecting around the idea of a sport. So like talking about F1 and talking about Donington, something that I've done previously is play music at
Events. You went to Silverstone, didn't you?
So they've got like a festival site on the side of Silverstone called the Woodlands. So we've done a few bits there. And then the same at Castle Donington, they've got like a marquee and the people that are camping over, you sort of do their entertainment at night. And it's very interesting to see the communities that build around the racing, and there's never any trouble. There's never anything. It's kind of like what it was at Download. That's how it feels. It's like everyone's on a bit of a vibe. Everyone's on the same wavelength and everyone's having a good time together. But, and actually something really interesting happened one year, and it was the, I'm so bad at remembering. I'm sure it was the World Cup, but it was the, I think it was the World Cup and the F1 at the same time.
Oh wow!
And England got quite far in the World Cup, if I remember rightly. It's quite recently, like a few years, like only a few years ago.
Was football coming home?
Yeah, that was it. But the whole event stopped being about racing, and it became about the World Cup.
Yeah.
It was really interesting. Cool. And you'd sort of see people disappear off to the track, but then people would filter back because they got the screens on the campsite,
and watching
all watching the football. I got really sunburnt, I remember that. And it was a really interesting experience because you could see the sort of purists going, we're not here for this, you know, getting angry about it. But actually, everyone was just on a bit of a ride together.
I think that's what sports should be about, if I'm honest. I say football, again, is something that's never really touched me. But I've been to a few games with friends. And what always amazes me is they have this kind of passion, but it's a passion for the players.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like there'll be the player that they love, who's always great, can't do any wrong.
Yeah.
And then there'll be players that are always useless. And, and then everyone hates the ref. So they're always swearing.
Common enemy.
Yeah, but it's a bit pantomimey.
That's interesting. So you've got archetypes within the games. You've got the goodies and the baddies in there. Yeah,
definitely.
Okay.
But I think it's, I don't know, but it is about people, isn't it? It's about engaging with people. I think the same thing happens with TV series, you know.
Yeah.
You know, when you first, I don't know about you, I find it quite difficult to switch between things. I have this kind of like autistic trait where I'm quite laggy with things. So I don't want to watch a new TV series because I know that I'll get attached to those characters and then I'll get sucked into it and then I'll have to keep watching it. But when I watch a TV series, if it's a good TV series, those characters become your friends.
Breaking Bad for me was that.
Bad. Lost is one of my favorites. Yeah. The Wire did it to me as well.
Game of Thrones, of course, for me. Yeah.
I still not watched Game of Thrones.
Yeah, don't, because it's six seasons where you're totally invested. It's what you just said. As soon as you pop, that's it. You're off.
They're your friends. But you're attached. There's goodies, baddies. Yeah. You're attached to that universe, and you become emotionally invested.
Yes.
And I think for me, that's what a good TV needs to do.
Yeah.
Movies do it as well. You know, when you get into that, you know, Star Wars is brilliant. Yeah.
You know them.
Yeah.
Once you know them, you're kind of, you're in.
But the thing is, you identify your people, don't you? Like, these are my people. You know, if I was in that world, this is who my people would be. And this is how this is what I would do. But I do think it's really similar to that, you know, that you become attached to the people in those worlds.
Mm.
And they kind of help you, you identify and you feel the pain. If bad things happen to them, you feel pretty bad about it. Same is true with sport, right? It's been obviously I'm a big F1 fan, and Mercedes have been really struggling, and you can see Lewis, it's hard to feel sorry for Lewis because he's obviously very wealthy and always looks reasonably happy. I'm sure he's not having a bad time, but he's really struggling. Can't get that car to get around circuit well at the minute. They're really, really suffering. And that kind of hurts me a little bit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You kind of think, I remember Lewis, Lizzie and I went to Brands Hatch, I think it was.
Mm.
And Lewis was there. Mm. And he, at that time, he would have been 14.
Right, wow.
Tiny baby. And we met him, had a chat and with a bunch of other people, right? Mm. But Lizzie always remembers that he was there, kind of thing. And ever since then, so he's kind of my guy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I kind of, and I like some of the things that he does. I like the way he's you know, stands up for people, and he's, you know, he's I don't know, I think his heart's in the right place. Yeah. Bless him. So to see him have a bad time, that's my guy having a bad time. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And that impacts me. And that, but that's what sport's about, I think. Mm. You know, it's not all about winning, is it?
It's the journey, isn't it? And it's funny how seasons have become almost like seasons of TV. And then it's interesting you talk about the Drive to Survive thing, and that journey and that story of a season of sport.
Yeah.
You know, and the drama that goes with it, and the relationships that might be get strained, or, you know, someone has a bad race, and, you know, something kicks off, and all of a sudden that level of theatre and drama that happens as a result of that is almost like watching a TV show.
It is. It's exactly like that. The lovely thing about Drive to Survive is that they cover the behind the scenes stuff. So you start to see the team principals and the pressure they're under and all of that kind of stuff. And, you know, the financing and all of that stuff, which is really good. Mm. Last season's Drive to Survive, the one that's just been aired, they came under tons of criticism because they added too much drama.
Right.
They made it, they kind of, it was
crying.
Really, he, no, it was really funny. They started to build like these like battles between drivers that just were not.
So this kind of pseudo rivalry.
Kind of built these rivalries and that didn't exist.
Yeah.
But what was really bizarre is there were rivalries that did exist.
That they didn't bother with.
Wow. And so the core community in Formula One have been a little bit miffed.
Yeah, and I remember we did a podcast a while ago with Mary Franklin.
Right,
and she was behind a lot of the Lucas film, Star Wars events, you know, the community. Yep. And one of the things that we spoke about on that podcast was this idea of when a community has so much ownership over something and it becomes a really strange dynamic between the fans and the actual kind of concept or the content, you know, whatever the product is or the series is. And you saw it with Game of Thrones, big time. Yeah. Nobody wanted that thing to end.
No.
Which is where this kind of rage about the last couple of seasons come from.
Yeah.
Because they had to wrap up the story somehow.
Got to stop it, yeah.
And when they did, and I was probably, you know, one of those people at the time, I was quite, oh, it's finished.
Yeah.
But that sometimes comes out as that was rubbish, you know. It's very interesting, that kind of, and I wonder if people do that, if, you know, it's like if their team lose, isn't it? It's awful.
When the team boss changes.
Yeah.
Before, you know, you always read about when team bosses change, or, you know, something, or the manager changes.
Mm.
You know, the fans feel like it's almost like the club, you know, are there for the fans kind of thing, and they owe it to them. But there's brilliant examples of that. Lost is a brilliant example.
Yeah.
So many people hated the ending for Lost.
Yeah.
And I it's still one of my favourites.
But I think that I think that comes from because people don't want it to end.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's the same thing, you know. We know when we put stuff out, say about the library, even some Riding the Low things.
Yeah.
We put things out on social media. People love the chase. So when you've got this thing that you put out that's like, you know, this thing's coming out in a few weeks, there's this huge excitement about it. But when the thing actually drops, it's like people aren't that bothered, you know. And it's the games console companies use it, you know, it's not available, you know, can't have it. Or, you know, it's coming. So that sense of, what's the word? I can't think of the word now. That tension that builds up, you know, as an expectation of whatever the thing is. And then suddenly when the thing lands and you're like, what's all that excitement about? You know,
it is. It's like building the demand, isn't it?
Yeah.
I watched a few weeks ago. I love watches. You know, I don't collect watches. Mm. I don't collect
anything. But you have got some watches.
I don't collect things, but I have watches. but I do. I just love reading about them. I just love the history behind them. Anyway, I was so. Omega and Swatch got together. So one of my favourite watches is the Speedmaster. Went to the moon, and I you know, love all of the history of the Apollo missions and everything like that. So that watch holds a real, real big importance to me. Anyway, it's a really expensive watch. You want to buy one of those watches today, it's about £5,500, crazy amount of money for a watch. They got together with Swatch and made a plastic version. Looks really, really similar to the proper version, and it's like £200.
Right, okay.
But they only made a few of them.
Right.
And the queues were around the stores. You don't get that. I mean, that was recently in the last few weeks. You don't get that for watches.
No.
People don't do it. But it was this kind of almost artificial demand.
Yeah.
You know, and they're building, they've said they're going to make tons of them, but that was just the first run.
Mm.
And people were fighting over them in the shops and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I think sometimes that, you know, that getting something early, you feel like you're getting something before other people.
Yes.
You know, you're getting something that some other people, you're getting something special.
Yeah.
But yeah,
social currency, isn't it?
It is. Yeah,
it's a lot of it's to do with social currency. It's the holiday snaps. It's the look how interesting my life is. It's that, isn't it?
If only people knew. I jet washed my patio this afternoon. That's how good my social. I should have posted that on social media.
Yeah,
bore people to death.
But we do, yeah. We snapshot, don't we?
Yeah.
Which is interesting because, you know, you come back down to. Loop it right back to the sport thing, and actually a lot of the sport outside of the characters and the drama and all of that is probably quite mundane. It's probably uninteresting. You know, but you hang on to find those moments of drama, you hang on to it to sort of, you know, experience like the next thing, the next you're holding magic, out for the next thing.
I think it's when we talk about on our music radio show, you talk about these massive rock stars, and I often talk about what's it like for them at home.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? And you that's something you don't think about, is it?
No.
You know, these like huge rock stars. You know, what was Freddie Mercury like at home? You know, what did he do? How did he start his day?
Did he
jet wash his patio?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I think he was feeding his cats, wasn't it? He had loads of cats.
Yeah, he did have loads. Didn't he? Yeah, his landlady fed his cats, didn't he? But for me, that is that connection to people.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about for sport. It's the same for music. Yeah. It's the same for everything for me. It's that connection to like the artist and what makes them tick, and that and again, it's on a personal level. It's kind of, you know, I associate with that particular artist, and that, you know, I can associate with them, so I'm probably going to like their material. Whereas other artists, you think, you know, I quite might like their music, but they're a bit out there for me. You know what I mean? They're kind of people that perhaps I'm not going to engage with quite so much. But it is about people. It's about those relationships and those people, and not just about, you know, the album cover or the music or the sports team.
Yeah.
It's about those people in them that we attach to. Same on social media, I think, as well.
Yeah.
You know, and you kind of build. A friend of mine was talking about this on social media and the recent, you know, obviously the last few years where meetings have all been virtual.
Yes.
And that she said, we had this face-to-face meeting in London a few weeks ago, and she said, I've got no idea how tall anybody is. and it blew me away. And I just thought, of all the things, isn't that funny? Because she never met anybody. Everyone's been on video conferences and putting their video camera on, doing all of the things and blah, blah, blah. But ultimately, she said, I don't know how tall people are. As if that was, you know, really like a quiz question or whatever. But
that's,
it's fascinating. Brilliant.
Maybe that's what you have to have. You have to have, like, you know, you have, like, you know, what gender you identify as, but then also how tall you are. Yeah.
Yeah. But isn't that weird?
Yeah. Yeah. So people can gauge, oh, they're, how high, how tall are they in relation to me?
Yeah. But I it was interesting that she would call that out. And she said that it's been really difficult to build those relationships entirely virtually.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and also, it makes you realise just how curated that view is. You know, with your sports team that you have those relationships with, and, you know, the TV series or whatever, it's not real, is it? None of it is real. You just get this curated view of what they want to put out to you.
Yeah, it's characters.
Yeah.
It's characters. Yeah. It's in the literal sense.
You know? Absolutely.
It got me thinking about, they're just doing a new Monkey Island game.
Yeah, you were talking about this.
That was my childhood, you know, Monkey Island 1, Monkey Island 2, and then they had these other ones. It's two things are happening. One is Monkey Island 2. This new Monkey Island game is the sequel of the second game.
Right.
Even though there have been other games out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're almost like cutting those out of the equation.
Going back
and saying that actually this is the way that story should
have gone.
And the same with the Smashing Pumpkins have done it with their record. So they're saying, not to discount any of their other material, but they got that this album that's coming out this year, this I think it's 33 track album, is a monster.
Yeah.
It's going to be the continuation of the story of Melancholy and Machina.
Yeah, gotcha, yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, not Adore and not those other albums. Like, they're a different story. This is and I'm like,
it's really
that's
interesting.
The best thing ever. Yeah. But it's not about the characters for me. It's about the world that was created from that from that music and that game and the world that you sort of jumped into, you know.
Yeah, that, do you know that we talked about this before, didn't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, there was a podcast called World.
And stuff
yeah,
like we talked
yeah.
about that, and I think that is, I don't know, that's a special thing, isn't it?
Mm.
Maybe, you know, I was reading, was it this week or last week, about what being human is. I've been reading tons about artificial intelligence lately, and that comes up quite a lot. You know, what is being human? And people try and define it in loads of different ways. But it's interesting. You know, can artificial intelligence imagine what it's like to be in another world or to do, you know? And that for me, that probably is what makes us uniquely human. That empathy, of you know, trying to imagine something new, or you know, try to imagine being somewhere different. You know,
which before we press record, you were sort of talking about this and how you know it's not possible for AI to kind of create. It's because it's just kind of copying or...
I mean, yeah, you know, it's mostly plagiarism, isn't it? It just kind of...
Plagiarism,
copies a bunch of stuff and then reorders it a little bit. Yeah. I mean, it can create, but it's rubbish.
It's missing the thing. The human stuff. The thing that connects you to a character. The thing that connects you to a world. The thing that, you know, gives you that sense of empathy towards another person or wants you to find out more about that journey in this particular direction and all that sort of stuff. That's the stuff that AI can't do.
Yeah, not that it will never do it, but today it's not. It can't reliably tell the difference between a baby and a dog in most instances. It's not
there yet.
No, I mean it's coming on hugely, but it's it's not there. I don't think it would have a favorite sports team. Or if it did have and you could program that, that easily. But it would almost certainly be based on, you know, the performance, the statistics and the numbers, the easily measurable, and not do you like Lewis Hamilton, do you like Max Verstappen? Can you associate with him? Because I think you know, I look at racing drivers in F1 and I think I would like you. You know, if we went out for a meal, we went out for a drink somewhere, you're people that I would, you know, I would like to, I imagine I would like to. So that's what I base my team choices on, you know.
So when you're in there, you're into that level of interest, let's say, in a sport because of the is there a point where you become invested in the numbers?
Yeah, definitely.
Or the stuff, you know, is the next level to really investing yourself in a sport, actually finding the beauty in the mundane?
Yeah, me. I think some people are always going to be like nerd. I mean, I'm from a mathematics background, so I love all of that. I love the stats and I love the data. I kind of love that art of trying to predict the future. I do absolutely love that. And there's lots of things about F1 that I love. The engineers pretty much can predict the fastest lap, who's going to do it, and they do it from a different country behind a desk, you know, in Woking somewhere. The engineers can do that based on the data that they've got from, you know, CFD and fluid dynamics models, which just blows my mind how accurate they can be. Clearly Mercedes have got that massively wrong this year. And they did really, really well in free practice this weekend. And George Russell was interviewed afterwards and they said, "Oh, you fixed the car." And he went, yeah, seems to be doing really well. We haven't got a clue why. And I love that. And I love the data behind it. I love the numbers behind it. But that's not what hooked me. You know, as an 8-year-old, it was an 8-year-old for me. It was Ayrton Senna.
Yeah,
you know, it was Nigel Mansell. Yeah. It was, you know, Alain Prost, Nelson Piquet. It was these kind of characters. You know, that they were brilliant. Hearing Nigel Mansell speak with his thick Brummie accent,
yeah,
and he was just brilliant. Yeah. I just thought, yeah, oh, he's just just amazing. You know, it's just, and there was those people, you know, and then that sucked me into the sport, and then that hooked me into, you know, the detail and the data, and you know, led me to do some just amazing things. I had breakfast with Frank Williams. At Grove. We watched the first Chinese Grand Prix. There was a few of us there, like 30 of us there, but it was amazing.
Yeah,
sat with Patrick Head talking about cars and engineering, and it was just this amazing thing, you know. But again, that came from me. That came from me. I absolutely loved Williams as a team, but I love Williams as a team because I really like Frank Williams.
Yeah.
You know, he was just this kind of calm and considered guy, and you know, he would often go and pick these young racing drivers, and you know, you could see he was really supportive behind the scenes and everything. And I just kind of thought, you know, if I was a team manager, I'd be like, you know, that's what I would be like.
Yeah.
And that's what hooks you into the team.
Yeah.
You know? And it's definitely about the people. It's always about.